another young man, Nicholas Turon. He's good morning, Nicholas. Welcome in studio. And Nicholas, you have been with K2C since 2016.
Yes.
And K2C Senior Project Manager of the Catchment and Conservation Team. And just give us a slight background about what you cover in that area.
We've got K2C has a diverse portfolio of projects. And I focus on our catchments and conservation work. So we do various things, but we focus on trying to conserve areas in the landscape. So whether it's working with landowners to declare protected areas or restoring places that are under threat. And over the past, I'd say 5-6 years or so, we've been very focused on the growing threat around specifically alien invasive plants in our catchment areas that are starting to take over grasslands. So, but yeah, we've got a diverse team and we're all over, actually. So
absolutely. I've got to tie you guys down because I know that you are always out somewhere. But why is the Blyder catchment so important to Hoedspruit and the wider region, Nick?
Yeah, I think there's growing recognition of it, and especially the last while, there's been a scare with the catchment, with the illegal mining.
That has put everyone on their toes with regards to the quality of the water.
Exactly.
As well.
And you suddenly realize how important our mountains and catchments are in the services that they provide. And the Blyder, and a lot of the other mountains and catchment areas in the landscape, I mean, we all sit on the bottom and you can look up whether you further north towards the Vorkburg side or the Blyder side or Sabi side, you know, those mountains are all critical for producing water. And if we don't have water, we don't have economies, especially in the Lowveld. And we all rely on it, whether, you know, you're a farmer with mangoes or protected areas or a community. It doesn't really matter. The town of Hoedspruit, the mines north in Palabor, we all rely on that water. And those catchments, we've been blessed for a long time that those catchments have stayed relatively pristine and untouched. But that situation can change very quickly. And we've learned that hard lesson specifically over the last 2-3 years.
Absolutely. I think that, and it has the illegal mining been quite a highlight in terms of, oops, here could potentially be a great problem.
Yeah, and it's sort of, it's the same thing with the alien plants. It sneaks in, it's not a problem, it's, you know, here and there, and then suddenly it expands, and before you know it, there's a major, major issue. But I think one of the, and again, it's just testament to the people around here and in the landscape, everyone just contributed and has made a major impact in dealing with those problems. You know, 2 years ago, I was terrified of, you know, what the future might hold and what could potentially happen. But that problem it's not been completely dealt with. There's always going to be an issue, and there's always going to be a need to continue efforts. It's not something that can be left alone. But a lot of the illegal miners are out of the catchment now, which is fantastic.
And Nick, but we have said that could have been the greatest threats, the alien vegetation and illegal mining.
Yes, in our catchments, definitely.
In your catchments.
Yeah.
And obviously alien vegetation clearing can sound like a general conservation activity. What is the direct connection between removing invasive trees and improving water security?
Yeah, I think I think the first thing is that you know, alien plants spread, and once they get a foothold, you have more and more trees, and that impact grows exponentially. You know, 1 hectare can become 2 hectares, 2 hectares becomes 4, and eventually you get to a point where, you know, you're very quickly losing huge amounts of land and you can't keep up. But people in general, and it's difficult to wrap your head around. You don't think about it. But an alien plant is taking a lot more water out of a catchment than grass. I mean, and the estimates always vary, and I think it depends obviously on who's done the studies and things like that. But you know, some estimates vary and say up to 250 liters can be taken up by a tree like
Sure.
that in a catchment in a day. And if you've got millions of trees, it's a lot of water.
That
starts impacting on water security. And lots of people, if you speak to farmers, especially in different places, you know, you'll quite often hear stories, especially in the catchment areas. You know, farmers will talk about when they were kids, how they used to swim in the rivers and things like that. And when plantations came in, suddenly those rivers dried up. So there's a lot of strong evidence, not just anecdotal evidence from stories, but the amount of water that used to come off those catchments, it's reduced significantly. And it continues to reduce. But yeah, when you just factor in how much water is actually being taken up, it can impact on water security and how much water you have in the dam that we all rely on, especially in the winter periods. I mean, that's
absolutely
your critical kind of periods where it starts to have a major, major impact.
And how much clearing has taken place so far, Nick? And where are the teams currently working?
So we've been actively working in the catchment, mostly around Blader River Canyon Nature Reserve. And we've had up to four contractors in the catchment, about 100 people. We've cleared, and it varies because it depends on how dense your areas are. Some areas you're working, you might have 1,000 hectares with 10 trees. Other areas you might have 50 hectares with thousands and thousands of trees. And then both take the same amount of time to clear. But we've done 20,000 hectares.
Wow.
And from our estimates, from the models that we use to estimate how much water is being released back into the system, and it's calculated as an annual replenishment. So the estimates are about 3 million cubes of water, which is equivalent to the total domestic annual water usage in Hoedspruit. So through clearing alien plants,
regenerated that amount of water.
And if you 3 million cubes is difficult to wrap your head around, but I was just looking now, it equates to, I think it's about 1,500 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Wow.
So it's a lot of water.
That puts it into perspective, hey?
Yeah, that's coming back into the system
back.
Every year.
What happens to that area specifically, Nick, once it's been cleared, and how important is follow-up treatments? So once that area is cleared, you take out the trees, you get rid of them, and then what?
Yeah, it's a constant. It's not something that you can just do and then walk away from and think it's going to be fine forever. So it is a labor-intensive exercise that will require work for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
So it's continuous.
It's continuous. Yeah. When you do the first clearing, it's very expensive and very difficult. And then you do follow up. So normally annually, and it depends on the situation, you go back through and continue clearing. But you do get to a point where your costs reduce significantly.
From that initial clean up then to the follow ups.
Exactly.
Okay.
And especially where you've got high density areas. Once those areas have a chance and the grasses start returning, and it's a process, we also use fire, you get to a point where, you know, you've just got seedlings sprouting up, and then instead of, you know, a team of 24 people for a month, you perhaps need a team of 24 people for a day or two to sweep through an area.
Okay, so that's always a follow-up. Sounds like a dental appointment.
Yeah, it is.
Initial extraction is painful, but the follow-ups are okay.
And it's like maintenance. It's like
you've
got to
maintain it all the time, I'm sure.
Don't maintain infrastructure that falls apart.
Absolutely.
It's the exact same thing, principle
and
here.
As well, what types of jobs and specialist skills are being developed through this work?
Yeah,
obviously the opportunity, sorry Nick, is to also to have that job creation.
Yeah, so it's very, it's an opportunity to create jobs and green jobs, and there's obviously a focus on trying to unlock those kind of economies. And the problem is always how you finance them into the longer term.
Yeah,
finding the business model to support that is difficult, and we could talk about that a little bit perhaps. But these, I think it's just important for listeners also to understand, you know, and we've learned this lesson very quickly, sending people into a catchment like that, it's, you know, you can't just pull anyone from any, I mean, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I have huge respect for the teams that are doing it. You know, to be in those areas day in, day out. These guys are camping out there. They've got specialized skills. They know how to use chainsaws. They're on cliff faces. We've got what we call high angle technicians that scale down cliff faces with ropes, and they're cutting trees down on cliff faces. So it's a highly specialized skill set, and it's a very, very professional team that we help manage. And we're constantly looking at ways to improve the efficiencies of the team, how quickly they're clearing, you know, how we use fire, when we send people in, how we save money on herbicide, all these kind of things. A team of 24 people is running at about 250,000 rand a month. So, you know, if you have four teams in a catchment, it's a million, and we're looking at scaling that to, you know, probably double, triple that eventually, if we're going to get on top of the problem properly
sooner,
throughout
yes.
the whole catchment and ensure that we secure those areas and ensure that there's water security around the catchment.
So that is it's quite a hell of a bill that needs to get paid at the
yeah.
end of the day.
Yeah.
And yes, it's specialized skill. It unfortunately, it's like you say, it's not someone that you can say, listen, let me give you an opportunity. You've got to have the skill and the know-how.
And training.
And the training, obviously, to be involved in that. With regards to the current estimates of impact of the current interventions, what does it mean in practical terms for Hoedspruit?
Yeah, and I think it does link to that water replenishment value, you know, the amount of water that's going back into the system. We estimate that, so we've mapped all the alien invasives within that catchment, and if we clear everything, there should be an additional 14 million cubes of water that's put back into the system. And that's currently, if we leave it, you know, that 14 million cubes of water that's being lost every year through alien plants, like I said, can quickly become 28 million cubes,
double,
and 28
triple.
Million cubes mm-hmm. becomes 50 million cubes. And 50 million cubes is the entire Blader Dam.
Sure.
So, you know, if you leave those areas, that is potentially what can happen. And then in the winter months, you know, we all obviously going to, in those kind of scenarios, yeah. we'll have a big problem. But we're lucky because I don't think we're going to get there. We've got teams. I think there's momentum around clearing in these areas and sustaining that kind of work. And there's a couple of things that we're working on. But yeah, it the reality is that this is going to be a long term. It's a 20-30 year project that you need to have in mind.
And we've also had some good rainfall as well, which obviously contributes to the water situation and keeping the dam at a full rate.
Yes.
And if you can go back and just give us a little bit of an update on the illegal mining in the Blader catchments and its effects on rivers and water quality, please.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have realized the impacts recently and how much sediment came into the dam, especially after this last rainy season. So the impacts are still very much focused around Pilgrim's Rest. The river at the moment is flowing much better. It's a lot cleaner. We say a lot cleaner, you know, 6 months ago it was a horrible red color. Now it's sort of a green color, which is still not ideal. If you consider 6 years ago, that river was running
clear, eh?
Clear, crystal clear.
That's the thing.
So I think the back of the problem has been broken. But there needs to be continual efforts to make sure that there isn't that illegal miners don't come back. The sad reality is that the illegal miners that have now decided to leave the catchment because of the enforcement action, and so many people have been involved and need to be praised for, and most of the people involved in that space don't want to be sort of recognized and but there's been so many people that have really contributed hugely and continue to do so.
Yes.
And you know, and that's financial support, the guys that are up there in the field dealing with those problems, very, very brave people. But yeah,
they are also it's criminals as well, you know. So they put themselves in a situation where they could get injured at the end of the day. And I know we had someone in here who was at the forefront of going out and finding these miners and shutting these down. And they go out, they're kitted out, hey, weapons, infrared. Yep. You name it, because it's like a little mini war out there at the end of the day. They put their lives at risk to do this.
Yeah, and there's interesting processes going on in South Africa at the moment where those syndicates and those networks and... Yeah, so it's a very scary space, the illegal miners themselves on the ground, I think, are sort of the most vulnerable groups that are being taken advantage of. But there's, you know, these networks of very scary people involved. And the reality is that a lot of the miners that are now have moved from our area are moving into other areas. And we know that's happening. So it does, I think one of the good things that has come out of this is the focus on this kind of problem. The government broadly across the country is going to have to come to the party, because these guys are going to move into other catchments and other areas. And there's, we're lucky perhaps that the problem has been the positive impacts that we've had, but then other people are now in the same situation that they've got to deal with the problem. So until those networks are dismantled and, you know, we get rid of these people, it's going to impact on us as South Africans.
And just to go back, that we understand that a follow-up sedimentation survey has been conducted at the Blyder Dam. Why was this necessary, and what had it found?
Yeah, we did the first surveys in around 2023 when we knew there was a problem starting with the illegal mining and the additional sediment we picked up that was going into the dam. So we did a very rough and crude study where we basically mapped the entire Blyder Dam using a boat and using sonar instruments that map the bottom. And then based on that, you can get an estimate of how much sediment has come into the dam and how much capacity you've lost in the dam. And there's very good data from up till the late 1990s when official surveys were done by DWS, the Bottom Water and Sanitation, around they've got a responsibility to track the status and health of dams, and this is one of the ways they do it. And we've got very frightening results that came out of that that estimated we've lost 20% capacity of the dam, and that was before the impacts this last season. So we've redone that survey, and it'll be interesting to see what the results of that are. We're still really pushing and trying to get government to officially redo that survey, because the equipment they use is much more finely calibrated than our equipment to get a definitive answer on how much sediment is now in the dam. But in any way, I think that work helped highlight the impacts that the illegal mining is having on the dam because of the sediment. A lot of the time, people are very concerned about the chemicals, but those flush out of the system quickly and can have disastrous consequences for downstream farmers. But the sediment is as big a problem, because you're losing long-term water security and capacity potential in the dam.
And Nick, how does the sediment reduce a dam's effective storage capacity? So if the sediment is decreasing, obviously that the knock-on effect is what in the storage capacity.
The storage capacity. So I mean, the dam has a 50 million cube capacity. So if you lose 20% of that, you know, that's 10 million cubes of water that you've lost. And in the dry season specifically, I mean, if you are in D-Day scenarios, which thankfully we've never been in this landscape, but in a D-Day scenario, you know, losing 10 million cubes of water can be disastrous, and the difference between no water and making it to the next rainy season.
And I know we were just saying now, I think we've had a fairly good rainfall, which is in our benefit. The El Nino that's coming, they forecast for South Africa, that's going to come to parts of South Africa. And they're saying that I was just reading up a little bit about the drought or the heat that is going to come with it. and what they are expecting temperatures to be like in Hoedspruit. You know, usually we know we get like a 40 max sort of temperatures on an average summer day, deep into summer. But they were saying that that can get up to 48%. And obviously that dissipation decreases the levels of the dam, and obviously that's where the sediment is so important. It's like a little catchment to protect that water as well. But will that have a big effect on the dam's rates of losing water?
Obviously the hotter it is, the more evaporation there is, and the big worry is the rainfall. If you get less rainfall, the dam might not fill up, or it might fill up and not stay full for as long as it normally does in a wet season. So there's a lot of variables, and it's going to be interesting to see. The forecasts are that we're heading into this dry cycle, which is normal.
It's not unknown though, so it's not. Yes. It's something we've been through, and it's just something that I would presume. The agricultural farming community out there needs to just take that into consideration and be prepared for it.
And I'm sure they are. And again, that's why, if you have a catchment that's in good condition,
it's to your benefit.
Yes. It ensures that the amazing thing about a catchment or a mountain is it's like a sponge. Mm. So if you have a functioning catchment that's trapping as much water as possible, that sponge is letting little bits of water out that, drips out slowly. If you leave a sponge on your countertop, it doesn't all come out at once. It just drips out slowly. And the catchment does the same thing. And where it's really, really important is in those winter months, where it's trapped and holding as much water as it can if it's functioning, and it's letting that gradual release of water out of the system. In the summer months, a lot of water flows over the sponge and goes down the rivers. But in the winter months, it's when it's critical. And if you have a lot of trees in the catchment that are on top of that sponge, it's continually sucking that water out, and it's evaporating into the atmosphere. So it's losing a lot of water.
Especially indigenous.
Yes. Well, so. Yeah.
And what do you think in terms of what work still needs to be funded and expanded for the CIP to reach its intended scale?
It's one of the challenges for this kind of work across the country. There's multiple catchments. If you drive up the road, if you drive to Dullstroom and you see all those mountain areas with alien plants, there's various catchments that face this.
And you see the little trickling waterfalls here, and the rock, the little waterfalls just somewhere out the blue. So those are all fresh catchment areas.
And so next time anyone's driving up to Dawson, just have a look and look at those different patches of pine trees coming up, and you'll see like areas where there's one or two, and those one or two, they drop seeds and it creates a seed bed, and eventually it just comes up everywhere. And then it is sucking up water that those little river systems are being lost. So there's the biggest challenge is the cost. We've had a very effective Working for Water program in the country over the past, operating for the last, longer than, 20, 30 years. But models to keep those kind of programs running are very, very difficult. So we've been working really hard to build a business case around why we need to clear. And water has value. The reality is that water has value. If all of us pay for our water, there's a rate and a tariff, and you're paying for that water. So if you are working to clear alien plants in a catchment, there should be a monetary benefit for everyone. The challenge is how much it costs, especially those upfront costs. So if we suddenly had enough money to do the clearing in the catchment, you're looking at a 5-year program that costs 150 million rand. So it's a lot of money, and then that significantly tapers off later, so that if you're contributing a tariff or something like that, and you're putting follow-up teams in, you can stay on top of the problem. The challenge is, how do we get on top of the problem, and how do we leverage enough money to get on top of the problem? And so there's been amazing progress in that regard in the country, with the release now of the Cape Town Water Bond, which is a global first. It's the first return on investment model for investors that is enabling people to do alien invasive plant clearing at
you know, with a 250 million rand ticket size, you know. So it really is an opportunity, and I think the more of these projects and exploring these opportunities with the financial sector that are very keen to unlock these kind of instruments, you know, the more of these opportunities are going to come along to unlock that. And we are negotiating with entities to do something similar here. But the reality is if we unlock something like that, it's still going to require some sort of co-funding or future security support to do the work, whether it's some sort of a tariff or some sort of a carbon credit or a nature credit or whatever it is. There, you know, you need to look at how you do this into the longer term. But it ultimately benefits people. It creates jobs. It creates stability in community areas. You know, there's less people rioting because they don't have water. There's jobs, additional jobs that are created because it's so labor intensive. So it really can be a win-win if models to do it are properly unlocked. And what we've been working really hard now is on these pilots and the 20,000 hectares we've cleared and the people we've trained. You know, it's proof of concept to really show like this can work, this is the benefits, and you know, how do we now progress this into that phase of scaling it through the catchment area. And it's not just Blader, it's the Volkburg, it's further south towards Sabi, Graskop. There's huge areas where this could be implemented into the longer term.
I think it would be amazing. And I think at the end of the day, if that tariff was implemented, you know, if you think of what the long-term benefits are, it's just a no-go. It's an easy answer.
And it's the other thing is it's significantly cheaper. If so with our Letaba project, because we're also clearing on the Hannesburg side, and there's 1,800 hectares there, and I think it's 0.6 million cubes. And then I just, you know, AI can be really helpful to give you an idea of things.
Of course.
But I'm just, you know, asking it like, okay, give me a sense of how much water that is. Okay, how big a dam is that? How much would it cost to build a dam like that? And the cost that came out of just that, you know, obviously it's a hugely rough exercise. Yes. But the costs are like 10 times more to build a dam that can hold that amount of water versus putting, you know, 30 people into a catchment that are doing the clearing. You're creating jobs, you're giving opportunities, you're protecting biodiversity, supporting the tourism sector. There's all these other little benefits associated with it. And with our business case as well, it also shows that clearing the alien plants it's the cost-benefit ratio. It's like depending on certain parameters, but it's between 4 and 15 times cheaper
to actually go and do
building
those
dams
projects
and that kind of thing. It's much cheaper. So actually, it's kind of like it's a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
Like, why aren't we doing this more?
Absolutely. Well, Nick, what can farmers, businesses, landowners, and residents around Hoedspruit do to support healthier catchment areas?
Yeah, I mean, it's always tricky. I mean, I think everyone has to do their bits at home and try as much as possible to save water, because it is a precious resource. I think the more people that are aware of issues, and we've seen that like with the illegal mining.
Yes, everyone came together.
People
for
came
that.
Together.
Wow,
and
the community, the support. We had so many people just rallying around it, getting involved, offering services, offering funds. To support the guys out there and just to create more awareness.
Exactly. So there's those kind of things. I think into the longer term, we're not sort of actively looking for funding specifically yet. Obviously, if there's someone really interested, they're more than welcome to contact us and talk to us. But in the future, I think it's going to have to be one of those collective things. If we can unlock the initial finance to do the clearing in the beginning, which is very difficult to support with, you know, whether it's a funder or, you know, even if it's people with good hearts. Mm-hmm. But down the line, you know, there is going to be a need to look at some sort of a tariff or some sort of mechanism to keep those teams into the catchments into
the
longer term.
Sustainability.
To make
of
it
these
sustainable.
Projects, yeah.
But I think people, as long as people, for me, I think the important thing is at this point that people are just aware. The next time people head up there and you're looking at some of these, you know, alien plants that are growing, just realize the impact it's having, not only on water, but on those natural ecosystems and the indigenous plants that flourish in those areas that you start losing, the orchids, there's amazing biodiversity up top there. A lot more than in the savanna system.
Yeah.
So I think that's just the most important thing, that people just realize and start having an understanding of that.
Well, as always, it's Nicholas Theron, always such a pleasure to have you in studio. I know you've got an absolutely jam-packed day and you're on a timeline. So we always appreciate K2C coming forward, and we love being partners with you guys and in association with K2C, keeping the community informed and sharing your knowledge.